The University of Wisconsin-Madison is considered one of the premier sleep research centers in the country. It boasts a comprehensive sleep program that represents the sleep disciplines of lots of areas, epidemiology, physiology, molecular biology, veterinary medicine, clinical medicine, among others. And the program's been training physicians in this discipline of sleep medicine for over 25 years. And I'll say at the outset, I went through this sleep clinic just to check on myself for sleep apnea. It was quite an experience. I enjoyed it, actually. And Dr. Mary Klink is the clinical assistant professor of pulmonary medicine in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. She's clinic director and a staff physician with Wisconsin Sleep, the Center for Sleep Medicine and Sleep Research, and treats all forms of sleep disorders. So if you're awake and listening, we hope you'll join in with your questions. You may have, and want to be late about this, because sleeping disorders, it can be a really serious thing for a lot of people. And I think can, I'm going to ask Dr. Klink about this, but can really have some adverse effects on our health, or and also on the health of our loved ones who might be sleeping right next to us. So if you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Dr. Mary Klink, welcome.
Welcome. Nice, thanks to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Sleep apnea has been in the news quite a bit recently, too, because of apparently a link with high blood pressure. Let's talk about sleep apnea for a minute, because I was tested for it, and apparently I don't have it. At least
lucky for you.
Yeah, the clinic.
My husband was not quite so lucky.
Yeah, the clinic sort of, I guess, gave me a clean bill of health on this, although my wife suspects that it was just a good night for me. But what is sleep apnea, and is there more than one kind of it?
Sure. The word apnea is medical jargon. The word apnea means a pause in your breathing. If you have a pause in your breathing, it's called an apnea. Lots of regular habitual snorers will have a few breathing pauses when they sleep at night, a couple here, a couple there. That's not the same as having the disorder of sleep apnea. True sleep apnea means you have repetitive, recurrent pauses in your breathing when you sleep at night. And people typically stop breathing for somewhere in the range of about 15 to 20 seconds would be an average common period of time that people have pauses in their breathing.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. If you ask somebody to hold their breath that long, some people can't do that voluntarily, but in their sleep they can.
So, and is it linked with high blood pressure?
Definitely. Going back to your question about are there different types of sleep apnea, the most common form of sleep apnea, what I would call garden variety sleep apnea, is obstructive sleep apnea, which occurs when people are sleeping and the soft, fleshy part of the air passage in the back of your throat, behind your tongue, where the roof of your mouth comes down, where your tonsils would be, that part of the air passage is soft and fleshy, and it's meant to close. It closes when we swallow. But other muscles, when we breathe in, other muscles tighten up to hold the air passage open so it can't collapse when we're breathing. When you sleep, all your muscles relax, including the muscles in the back of your throat. And in people who have obstructive sleep apnea, what happens is they're built with a smaller, floppier air passage in the back of their throat. And during sleep, as the muscles relax on an intermittent basis, it gets narrowed and floppy enough that as they suck their air in, they just suck the air passage shut, and then they obstruct their airway, and that's called obstructive sleep apnea. Fortunately, people are beautifully designed to breathe. It's a high-priority item. So every time you stop, all these little alarms go off in your system, and they make your brain wake up for a second. You get waking muscle tone in your throat, and your throat opens up, and you go back to breathing, and your brain goes right back to sleep, and by and large, you never even know what's happening. But if that occurs frequently enough and repetitively enough during the night, it can take a toll on your sleep. And commonly, people will develop sleepiness or drowsiness in the daytime. That's the most common form of sleep apnea. Yeah. Some people have what's called central sleep apnea. Uncommon and seen mostly in people with who take narcotic medications, particularly people with chronic pain syndromes, where the specialty of sleep medicine has really intervened in the last 20 years and really provided a lot of relief for people with chronic narcotics. But In some of those individuals, they develop central sleep apnea where the brain signals to breathe. Breathe, breathe, breathe.
Breathe. Sort of forgets to let you know.
It forgets. There's a pause in the actual signal to breathe, and then they stop breathing for and that's not from obstructing their air passage, but because there's not an effort to breathe. You can see that in people who are on chronic narcotic therapy most commonly, or people who have heart failure. Certain kinds of heart problems can also have that kind, and that's probably about 5 to maybe 8%
percent of everybody. Well, I tell you what, every one of our lines is full.
Okay.
So I think we should go to Jesse in Madison, who was first up here. Jesse, hello.
Hi. My question is actually, I have difficulty going to sleep at night.
Yeah.
It's just I pretty much stay up and watch TV. I play games on my computer. Usually don't get to bed until about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I usually have to get up around 7. Now, I'm a cigarette smoker. I kind of changed my question. You know, are there any studies that link cigarette smoking with preventing you from sleeping or affecting that slap you were talking about in the back of the throat?
There actually is an association between sleep apnea and smoking. If you want to talk about risk factors for obstructive sleep apnea, the most common form of sleep apnea, actually, cigarette smoking is an increased risk factor for development of sleep apnea. Your problem doesn't sound so much like sleep apnea. However, nicotine is a stimulant, and people who have difficulty sleeping and are also smokers, some people, I don't know if it applies to you, but some people have the habit of, you know, I'm up, I'm not doing anything, I'm smoking. And that's really counterproductive for sleeping, particularly getting to sleep. Anything that's a stimulant, do you drink much in the way of caffeine products at all?
I try to stay away from the soda. I usually just drink water before I go to bed.
One of the things that people do when they can't sleep is they find things to keep themselves busy. They're often trying to find ways to distract themselves. But depending on what you're doing, it can be too stimulating. Watching TV, usually you're watching a program. It's got a plot line, and you kind of want to know what happens at the end, and that'll keep you going. And playing video games is actually pretty stimulating, even checking emails on the computer. And when people have difficulty getting to sleep, we usually recommend, first of all, make sure you have enough wind down time, just downtime and relaxing time before you go to bed. Don't be busy right up until bedtime. And then to do something which is distracting, relaxing, but the key thing, not too stimulating when you get into bed at night. Reading, but not a novel. Again, it's too interesting. You know?
I'll tell you what I used. I had the book Gravity's Rainbow. There was a time when I was having trouble going to sleep, and I could pick up Gravity's Rainbow, and I read the first 6 pages of that book
57 times.
I know.
157
somewhere,
times.
I lost the book. I don't know what happened to it, but I wish I had it back because it would put me right to sleep.
Reading is a great way to do it, but you have to pick something that is not so gripping, which apparently Gravity's Rainbow was not.
Not for me. Not for me anyway.
I read a layman's book on quantum physics. I've decided not to go to my grave without understanding quantum physics, and like you, I've read the first chapter about 18 times.
So there you have it, Jesse. Some things you need to do probably to change. Of course, quitting smoking would be a great one. But I know you've heard that before, so I'm not going to go into that with you again, except to urge you to do it. But this whole business of developing a routine, I think, is a good one, and winding down a bit before you go to bed, and not rushing right up to the point where you hit the bed. Yeah, those are good tips. Good luck. Dennis and Madison, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, I have no problem falling asleep. My head hits a pillow, and I'm out about 5 minutes later. My problem is staying asleep. Typically wake up around 3 in the morning or so and cannot get to sleep after that.
Oh. I've had that happen, too.
Yep. Very common. Probably more common than trouble getting to sleep at the beginning of the night. And the same sort of things are often recommended to my patients when they have difficulty. One of the things that you need to avoid doing is staying in bed for extended periods of time trying really hard to sleep.
Ah. What do you do?
You need to distract yourself. If you're in bed for 15, 20 minutes and you're not going anywhere for sleep, we recommend actually getting up out of bed, moving to another location that's quiet and relaxing, and doing something, as I was telling the previous caller, something that's relaxing, distracting, not too stimulating. Reading, again, nonfiction reading material mm-hmm. is best. And do that until you feel drowsy enough to go back to bed. Really avoid staying in bed. And the other thing is, get the clock out of the bedroom.
Oh, get the clock out of the bed. How can you do that? I've got a clock radio that wakes me up.
You can set your alarm. You can put your clock out of sight, put it under the bed or turn it around or something. But just really try to ignore the time cues during the night. There's nothing more counterproductive than going, oh, no, it's 3 o'clock in the morning again. Oh, I always have trouble getting back to sleep. Oh, I have to get up the next morning. Oh, if I don't get back to sleep by such and such a time, I'm going to have trouble. So we really recommend ignore the time cues.
Our guest today, Dr. Mary Clank, Clinical Assistant Professor of Pulmonary Medicine in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison, talking with her today about sleep apnea and other sleeping disorders. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking sleep apnea and other sleeping disorders now with our guest, Dr. Mary Clank from the School of Medicine and Public Health at the UW-Madison, where she's a physician, clinical assistant professor of pulmonary medicine. As a matter of fact, she directs the clinic for the Wisconsin Sleep and Center for Sleep Medicine and Sleep Research, treats all forms of sleep disorders. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening. Give us a call if you have a question at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And we'll go right to Kevin in Tomahawk. Kevin, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was like the last caller. I don't have a problem falling asleep, but staying asleep. And so I have a sleep study scheduled next week. What's the best case scenario they can learn from that? Or do they just use that to throw more drugs at it? Or
what are you,
I'm open to anything at this point.
Yeah.
Most of the time, sleep studies aren't done for people with straightforward insomnia. If your doctor recommended a sleep study in your situation, most commonly the studies are done if there's a suspicion for the possibility of sleep apnea, if there's a suspicion for the possibility of periodic limb movement disorder, which is a sleep disorder related to restless legs. So best case scenario, they find something as a cause of your sleeping difficulty that can be fixed rather than just having to take a sleeping pill.
And resort to drugs, yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Mark in Janesville, on to you. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon. I want to be an evangelist for sleep studies. I was on a hunting trip and fortunate enough to have someone tell me I wasn't just snoring, I had sleep apnea. I got the study, the CPAP, and it was a life-changing experience. I feel like I've got a lot more energy, and I've got a friend who I convinced to have one done, and when he got his machine, he said, my heavens, this is what other people feel like in the morning.
That's right. You go ahead. You be an evangelist. We could use more people like you. There's just so many people out there with sleep apnea.
Yeah, it really, really helps, and the machines get better every year and more comfortable, and it's really not a problem to wear one.
Yeah, you know, I had a friend, this is like 10, 15 years, probably more like 15 years ago, who had sleep apnea, and the machine that he had, it sounded, I mean, it was awful, it was really loud, and now a couple of years back, a friend had I heard his machine, and my goodness, there was hardly...
You could barely hear his machine,
could barely hear it.
Yeah.
So that's really, Mark's right, that's really changed, has it?
Right, exactly. And the equipment just keeps getting better and better, smaller, quieter, more portable. The masks and things that you can wear on your face when you use CPAP keep changing and getting smaller and less cumbersome. And even people who have had, I mean, I have patients who come into the clinic who have had been diagnosed with sleep apnea in the past and couldn't get comfortable using CPAP, you know, years ago. Now come back again, and they go, oh, my God, I can't believe the difference in the equipment. And, you know, I couldn't use it before, but I can use it now. It's
sure
so much better.
Yeah, sure can. Karen in Eau Claire, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Karen.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I actually have a question about hyponsomnolence. I think I'm saying it the right way. I have two children that they're actually 20 and 18, and they have a problem where they just want to sleep all the time. They did a sleep study, and both of them have the hyponsomnolence, so they're on Provigil.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to go on the internet. There is not a lot of information I could find about. Is it genetic, and why do people have it? And
the term is hypersomnolence.
Oh, hyper.
Hypersomnolence.
Okay.
And it just means excessive sleepiness. And excessive sleepiness is one of the really common problems that people come to see me about and my partners about at the sleep center.
Mm-hmm.
Just excessive sleepiness that can't be accounted for by lack of sleep or any other intrinsic sleep disorder. One of the causes of hypersomnolence can be narcolepsy. Now, narcolepsy is a specific neurological condition which causes excessive sleepiness and also a few other accessory or accompanying symptoms. Cataplexy, where typically if you're laughing, your muscles feel weak or you might feel weak in your knees. Rarely it's pronounced enough for people to fall to the ground, although that's usually what gets shown on television shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or sleep paralysis. Sleep paralysis means as you're waking up, typically as you're waking up, sometimes as you're falling asleep, you're awake and aware and you're fully aware of what's going on, but you cannot move. And it's not that half awake, half asleep feeling. It's a, oh my God, it's a scary feeling. I'm here. I can't move. Do your children have any of those symptoms?
No, we just thought it was a teenage thing, but when they went away to school, they would, like, be tired during the day, and they would lay down to take a nap, and then they wouldn't wake up and miss a class. They were, like, napping 5 hours during the day, and on weekends, they would just want to sleep all day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just excessive sleep. And my one daughter is borderline narcolepsy, you know, it's not like they do a
sleepiness,
lot of caffeine. Sleepiness, or, I don't know.
Yeah, sleepiness is fairly complex. Daytime sleepiness is a fairly complex assessment to make in younger people. One of the most common causes of excessive sleepiness in younger people, and again, I don't know if this applies to your children,
yeah,
but in general, is what's called delayed sleep phase syndrome, where everybody knows about this from teenagers. I'm up all night, and then I sleep in until 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when you're trying to live on a regular schedule, either for work or school, and you have delayed sleep phase syndrome, you don't fall asleep until later, and then you're getting up at a regular time with the rest of us, you run around totally sleep-deprived. And that can be a common cause. There is there is familial, meaning it runs in families, familial hypersomnolence, where you sometimes see clusters of excessive sleepiness in multiple family members.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have other people in other generations of your family with sleepiness?
Well, my husband is a physician, and he does this thing where he can come home and take a 20-minute nap, and he needs that 20-minute nap every day, and then he's great.
Mm-hmm.
But not really. At first I just thought, well, kind of a teenage thing, and then now they're on Provigil, and it's amazing. But it's kind of... the thought of them having, to be on that for the rest of their lives is, I wish there was some behavioral type therapy or something, but, if it's genetic or...
Yeah, what is that particular medication, Dr. Klenk, that you mentioned?
Provigil is, we would call it a stimulant. It falls under a slightly different classification, which... puts it under different prescribing regulations. It's called a wake promoting agent.
Wow.
As opposed to a stimulant. Most of the classic stimulants fall under very specific prescribing restrictions, which Provigil does not fall under. But essentially, it is a form of a stimulant medication.
Mm. Interesting.
It's not a Schedule II drug that...
No, it's not.
Okay.
Not like most of the typical stimulants like Ritalin or Adderall or amphetamines.
Is that pretty much the common drug used for hyponsomnolence?
It's the drug that most of us as prescribing physicians would like to use as our first choice. It's often not allowed, or I shouldn't say allowed, but it's often not covered by many insurance companies, except for very specific diagnoses, often being restricted to being covered for patients with a true diagnosis of narcolepsy. That varies from insurance company to insurance company.
Is it expensive?
It's a very expensive medication.
You know, and that when they were doing their sleep study, it was hysterical because they'd make them get up. They went to bed, and then they'd make them get up at 6:30, feed them breakfast. My girl said that, like, they had video cameras on them, and they wanted to just go back to bed. And one of them kind of fell back on the bed, and the nurse came in. No, you have to get up. So she made her sit in a chair, and then she was slouching in the chair. I mean, they were... I would have liked
They were pretty sleepy. They were convincingly sleepy,
yes,
right?
Yes, they were. And they knew nothing about it. It's not like they were forewarned about, now this is what you need to do. They were just like, there was no question. But anyway, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, Karen. Thanks very much for your call. Oh, boy. Let's see. Let's go to Andrea in Sussex next. Andrea, hi.
Hi. I'm so glad you're having this program, by the way. I'm calling because my husband has what is described as an extremely severe case, and thus far he's not really been able to be fully helped. He's been on a CPAP machine for about a year and three quarters. He's had three different machines, five different settings. He's on Provigil. He's had all the... symptoms that have been talked about, you know, not being able to sleep, not getting able to back to sleep. But the most chronic thing that he suffers from is even if he has a full night's sleep, which normally you would think would be restorative, he's terribly tired throughout the day. He can fall asleep at any given time. And he gets upset because he can't accomplish much because he's always tired and always sleepy and it just seems so unnatural that an adult can fall asleep at any given time.
So did I understand you to say that he has trouble actually sleeping in addition to having sleep apnea?
At times. You know, he's had all of the classic symptoms. Sometimes he's had trouble falling asleep and other times not. I would say it's a lot better than it was. And his settings have been changed any number of times and the Provigil has been increased. And he has had three sleep studies, and he was questioned extensively by the last specialist, you know, were there other factors that might be interfering with sleep, such as noisy neighbors, dogs jumping on the bed, et cetera, you know. But everyone who sees him says that he seems to have the worst case they've ever seen, that he can't get help, you know, with this sleepiness during the day. And as you said, the Provigil is supposed to be a stimulant, you know.
Right. Provigil, in patients who have significant obstructive sleep apnea and are being treated, you know, are on CPAP, are consistently using their CPAP, and the CPAP is set at appropriate settings to control their apnea, in that situation, there is still about 10% of people whose sleepiness does not resolve. And then those are the people in whom you end up adding Provigil, which is generally covered by most insurance companies in that specific setting. Those are the people in whom you end up adding Provigil. Sometimes Provigil is not sufficiently potent for those people, and sometimes you have to move on to more potent stimulant medications. But sort of the tick list you go through when you're treating people like your husband and trying to make things better for them are making sure that, you know, they are indeed using their CPAP as consistently as they should, which it sounds like he is.
Yes.
Make sure that there aren't significant equipment issues like leakage, which is a common problem. Is he on a mask?
Yes.
That covers the nose or the nose and the mouth?
The nose and the mouth. This is his fourth mask.
Okay. So if it's his fourth mask, I'm presuming he's having a lot of leakage problems?
No, it just, he did have leakage with one, but his last sleep study, they determined that this would be a better mask for him.
Better or good?
Well, he's right here. Is it better, Kurt?
What?
Your new mask? Yes, he says it's better.
Yeah. Okay.
The other question I have for you is, as the partner of a person with sleep apnea, or the wife, I have a big problem with the cold blasts of air.
Mm-hmm.
And if he turns towards me, I really get it. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that can be done to avoid that. Is there any contraption that can be put on so that it doesn't blow that cold blast of air?
There really isn't, other than just turning the other direction. It's turning the other cheek, so to speak.
Yeah, I have a problem. I can only lay on one side, so I usually wind up, you know, pulling the quilt way up over me so that I don't get
I don't know
it.
How many patients I've and their spouses I've met where they say, you know, I can only sleep in one position.
Yeah.
And so, and I go, well, why don't you sleep on the other side of the bed then? And people go, oh.
Well, that wouldn't work in our case because he has another problem and needs to be
close to a certain side of the room.
Yes. But
the other thing I was going to say, though, is that in patients like your husband's situation, a lot of times the treating physician, and it sounds like the last person you saw was pretty thorough, but the treating physician has to really keep their ears sort of pricked up for the possibility that more than one thing is going on. So, you know, if all the attention is directed at treating his sleep apnea, not to overlook the fact that there could be other issues that could be affecting.
Yeah, he went pretty extensively into all that. And,
right, and he didn't have periodic limb movements of sleep on his sleep study. Was that addressed at all, either to say yes, he did, or no, he didn't?
He does.
He does have periodic limb movements of sleep?
Mm-hmm.
And is that being treated as well?
Well, yes. We are supposed to go back to the doctor when we get back. We're actually in Door County at the present time.
Mm-hmm.
But we always listen to public radio, so I was so thrilled that she had the program.
Yeah.
But it is a very, very serious problem. I mean, when you
right.
hear these people stop breathing, it's really scary.
Right. Yeah. There's also some newer forms of machines out that are not exactly the same as CPAP.
Oh.
There are some variations on machines. There's BiPAP. There's ASV, adaptive servo-ventilation. And for people who have what's called complex sleep apnea, which is when you do the initial sleep test, they have obstructive sleep apnea. But when you put them on CPAP, they start to have a lot of these central apneas that I was referring to previously.
Okay, those, ASV?
ASV is in Victor.
Oh, okay. And what was the word that went with it?
It's just called ASV or adaptive servo-ventilation. Everybody calls it ASV.
Okay, and then you mentioned one before that.
BiPAP,
B-I-P-A-P. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it does sound like the last person he saw was very thorough, and I would probably follow through with that individual.
Yeah, that sounds good. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Andrea. Appreciate it. Sarah from Eau Claire sent us an email. What's the efficacy of subliminal noise or talking meditation tapes to fall asleep, stay awake, whatever?
A lot of people use meditative techniques to help fall asleep, either at the beginning of the night or, as a couple of the callers, waking up in the middle of the night and having trouble getting back to sleep. And if people practice those techniques, and I literally mean practice them in their waking hours so that they're comfortable doing those techniques during the night, they can be very, very effective.
And Ryan has a really bad, in Chippewa Falls, has a really bad snoring problem. It's loud, and his girlfriend says he stops breathing for up to 30 seconds at a time. Is there a testing?
Get thee to a sleep lab.
Well, he wonders if there's a testing center. He's from Chippewa Falls. There's got to be one in Eau Claire, I would think.
Eau Claire has a good sleep center.
So I would look on, where would you go? Just go to the sleep, would there be a sleep center in the Yellow Pages?
It's located in the main hospital.
Oh, so it's in the
in
main?
In the main hospital in Eau Claire.
Okay.
I believe it's part of the Gunderson Clinic at this point in time.
Okay. All right, so there's some help for Ryan. Jason in Richland Center. What's your issue?
I have several issues, but I bet you I can probably help some people out there. I I was diagnosed with a sleep apnea. I've been on a CPAP machine. I've been on Provigil, and just like your previous caller, lady's husband is tired all day.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a big, I'm a big guy, but I'm not a heavy set guy.
Yeah.
And I'm tired all the time, and nothing has seemed to help. And I guess one of my questions, would surgery be an alternative to fixing this problem with the CPAP machine, because it doesn't seem to be helping very much?
No.
Are you using the CPAP consistently?
Yes,
and it's
I am.
And it's set at an appropriate setting?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been verified that it's set, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If your sleepiness has not responded to treatment with CPAP, it would be highly unlikely that surgery would be an effective alternative in terms of treating the apnea and resolving the sleepiness. The surgery, unfortunately, the typical surgery that's done, is called a UPPP, uvulopalatopharyngoplasty.
Oh, my goodness.
Hence, UPPP.
Yeah.
They remove your uvula, the punching bag that hangs down on the back of your throat. They remove a portion of the soft palate, the soft fleshy part of the roof of the mouth, and your tonsils if they're still present, and they're trying to enlarge the air passage, the portion of the air passage that you can see when you look directly in someone's throat. You mentioned you're not particularly heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly. Now, this is a thing, though, because you mentioned at the beginning of the show that there's two forms of this type of not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And one was being of the soft tissue blocking off the airway.
Mm-hmm.
The other would be, I wasn't quite sure what you said.
Central sleep apnea, where the brain's signal to breathe pauses.
Okay. I have sleeping paralysis also, which
mm-hmm.
I heard you mentioned what that was, and I'm actually on YouTube, and I've seen several people go through the same symptoms that I've had since I was in seventh grade, and I'm 34 now. But I fixed that half of me, the paralysis I no longer have, and I found that through a medication called Paxil or paroxetine, and it seemed to completely wipe it out.
Yep. Antidepressants are the primary treatment for sleep paralysis or cataplexy that people with narcolepsy get, as I mentioned before, that sudden muscle weakness you get with strong emotion, typically with laughter. Antidepressants, in the majority of people, antidepressants are a very good therapy for sleep paralysis or cataplexy. And having sleep paralysis doesn't necessarily mean you have narcolepsy. Sleep paralysis actually occurs in a surprising number of people. As just an isolated phenomenon. However, if you have long-standing sleepiness and sleep paralysis, then, you know, the person that you work with as a sleep physician, you know, you need to continue to work with that individual. And have you had the daytime nap testing done?
Yeah. And I've had an episode where it actually happened to me, with the sleeping paralysis. I forgot if there's a little term that they use, an acronym or something, but it had actually happened to me during that short session that I had. As long as I'm not on the paroxetine or whatever, it can happen within 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're about 30 seconds to go here, so possibly one of those new machines might be worth a try in his case.
Yeah, I would go back and talk to your sleep physician to make sure that you're on the best treatment for your apnea. Again, if the CPAP has not been effective for the drowsiness, the surgery is unlikely to be effective. And you may need some further assessment to see whether your sleepiness is really related to sleep apnea or something else.
Yeah. And I wish we had more time, Jason, and also Dr. Klink. I wish we had more time. I hope you'll come back and do this again with us sometime.
Be happy to.
Really pleased to have you back. Sleep apnea and sleep disorders, the topic with Dr. Mary Klink, who is clinic director and a staff physician with the Wisconsin Sleep, the Center for Sleep Medicine and Sleep Research. And we'll have her back and we'll do this again. And I thank you all for listening very much, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.